Welcome to Iteration, a weekly podcast about programming, development, and design. My name is John Jacob. I am a developer and designer, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, JP. How you doing, JP?
Pretty good. We got some good stuff in store today, I think.
Yeah, I'm super excited. We are not tied to the shackles of a book this week, so we can talk about whatever the fuck we want. So this week, we actually have a really interesting conversation. I've been looking forward to getting into this. Like, the whole topic we're trying to tackle today is when tech meets business, or applying tech to a specific domain. And to help guide us through this conversation, I'm really excited we actually have a guest today. So JP, you want to kind of introduce us to our guest today?
Yeah, we have a guest who is also named John. It seems like that might be a prerequisite to join our show.
To be a guest on a podcast, you have to be named John.
No, I'm kidding. But yeah, I have one of my coworkers who's on this video call with us, which is going to be super fun. I'll let him talk about himself, but his name is also John. He is into real estate investing, and he's been with me at Open Door since the open listings days.
Oh, cool.
And he was, in fact, the coworker that I sat next to when I first started.
Oh, nice.
So, John, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Cool. Hey, I'm John, everyone. I am a computer engineering major. I graduated from UCSD in 2014. I worked at Intel for about 3 years as a former engineer. Realized I hated it. and so I found open listings about 2 years ago and been there ever since.
Wow. And did you say you were a firmware engineer at Intel?
Yes.
Damn. I feel like that's like such deep, low-level technical shit that's so far above my head as like a Rails and JavaScript guy. What was that jump like? Like shifting from like more technical metal-to-metal development over to web development? And why did you make that jump? I'm just curious, like as an introduction to a conversation.
I think it was pretty tough, actually, because you go from like low-level, like dealing directly with like memory and hardware and signals, all the way to like really high level, like, hey, you know, there's all these libraries to help you, like, you know, do all these things. And so the thing that really helped me was, I guess, like my computer science, computer engineering background. I think the foundation of like having algorithms and the basis of all that really helped with that. And so, and I also did a couple of like internships during my college years as a web dev. So that made it a little easier. I actually wanted to work on more direct consumer-facing products, so like mobile apps, web apps, versus like when you're working on firmware, it's like it's still a product, but it's like it's more of a background process, and so I wanted to do something where like I had direct interaction with consumers.
Yeah, it makes a ton of sense. Awesome. That's super cool. So what we want to talk through today, and kind of the subject here, is about like when tech meets business. So trying to apply software into a specific domain. And I feel like this is something that I really am super passionate about, because like as a development firm, we work in a lot of different domains. So I get to see a lot of different businesses and get to like deep dive into how their businesses work, and then try to like solve those jobs to be done once we get those defined. I think it's interesting, but I think for today's topic, because both of you guys are so deep in it, is we're really going to talk about real estate as it relates to software. And I'm sure that the conversation will jump off from there. So can you tell us a little bit why you guys both, I really put this more to John, but JP too, why are you guys interested in working in software in the context of real estate? And maybe give us like a 2 second primer on Open Door again, just so we can kind of be fresh for the conversation.
Cool. Yeah. So I could give a little bit of an intro, I guess, to what Open Door is. I'm still a little fresh. We were at this tech conference in LA. It's called Tech Day LA. And I was not prepared to give the 30-second elevator pitch of like what Open Door is when a bunch of random people came up to us and they're like, Open Door, what do you guys do? And so
and you're like, oh shit.
Yeah, it's like, oh wow. I was prepared to talk to budding software engineers who are looking for jobs, not like product managers from other companies that are interested in what we do. So John, feel free to interrupt me at any time when I say something that is potentially wrong, because you certainly have more real estate expertise than I do. But the pitch that I was telling people is that we help people buy and sell homes. So one of the main use cases for Open Door is, and not the only use case, but certainly something that we strive to do better at, is helping people move. And John Jacob, you can certainly empathize with this, is like, I want to buy a new house, but I currently own another house. And so like, I want to sell this house, and then I'm like going to be in escrow, but I haven't closed escrow yet on this other house. So this whole like moving process is kind of a pain in the ass, because I have two properties that I kind of own, but I only want to own one. So like from a problem, like a user's problem standpoint, that is like one of the problems that we want to solve. Now, certainly you could break that down into smaller parts where like, I just want to sell my house and I just want to buy my house. We can certainly help you with those things too. But if we're just talking at a very high level, what our company helps users accomplish, that is what it is.
Like, I did not know that about Open Door. We've talked about Open Door for like a year since we're working. I feel like I'm pretty familiar with the company, but I would just say like, oh, they do MLS listings. Like they're like a Zillow Plus, and like they also do something around like helping buy and sell, like transactionally. I had no idea that you actually like solve this idea of one house to the other. So how do you solve that as Open Door from like a practical product perspective? And then I would love to start diving into like why you guys are attacking this as software engineers and some of the other interesting technical challenges.
I'll let you take this one, John.
Cool. I think from a product perspective, it's just being able to give users or consumers the ability to just sell directly to us without having to deal with market uncertainty.
Wait, so Open Door straight up buys the house?
Yeah.
So wow.
Like think about like low liquidity markets such as like Phoenix, Dallas, and Atlanta, right?
Sure.
Where if you want to get top dollar, you're probably going to have to wait 60, 90 days until you get your first buyer, right? And even during that process, once you get into escrow, there's still uncertainties where like, hey, the buyer might get cold feet and just back out, right?
Absolutely.
Where we can come in is we'll say, hey, you know what? You can give us your address. We'll give you evaluation on your house. We'll do an inspection on your house to see, hey, is this properly evaluated and all that stuff? And if you like we'll give you an offer within 2 to 3 days. If you like it, within a week, you can actually close and sell your house to us.
Shit, man. That's so fast. Like, I just bought a house like 6 months ago or so, and like the whole process was so long and drawn out. And I couldn't imagine being able to like turn a house purchase that quick. It almost reminds me like you guys are in effect the software answer to those like cardboard signs on street signs that say like, sell your home fast, sell your home fast. Like I see those all the time. And that's kind of what you are, but probably not so shitty and not undercutting. Like I'm sure that it's cheaper, obviously, like you don't get as much money for your home, but there's obviously so many benefits by going that direction. So cool. I think we have a good summary of the product. So why did you guys each jump into this? And I'm more curious for you specifically, John.
Yeah, go ahead, tell him.
Cool. So I have like a real estate background. I've actually been helping with my family business in real estate since 2014. Actually, I started out by discovering the Redfin app. And so I was in the process of like finding like deals to like buy and sell for our family business. And so ever since then, I've just been really interested in real estate. And so actually how I found Open Listings was I was so sick and tired of my job. Went to AngelList because I wanted to do like a real estate startup job. And
oh, cool.
Yeah. And I eventually found Open Listings, did an interview one of the weekends that I came down to LA, and eventually got an offer.
Didn't you also see Open Door on AngelList and was like, oh, that would be so great if I could actually land there too?
Okay. So go back a year before I actually started. That's when I actually started my job search in real estate startups. And so one of the first companies I heard of was Open Door, and I actually applied to Open Door and actually didn't get a reply back. But on their job listing, it said, hey, we're looking for React engineers and Rails engineers, right? So I was like, all right, cool. I'll learn React on the side. And so I took a Steven Greider Udemy course, which I think JP also took, learned that on the side, and eventually got the Open Listings job.
Wow, that's super interesting. So, okay, I want to get a little bit deeper into the question. I think it's awesome that you saw Open Door, kind of went to Open Listings, and then you ended up being like this Trojan horse that went into Open Door anyway. Yeah. I love that story. I think that's great. But actually, you said that you were looking for early stage real estate startups.
Yeah.
So I guess my bigger question is like, why? Like why? You had probably a really sweet job at Intel. I would imagine that's a great career. And to like go to this high risk environment of doing real estate, what the fuck? Like why?
Yeah. I know there's like always this like stigma of like, hey, you know, when you work at this big corporate offices, it's like, hey, it's really nice and stable. It's like, you know, nice and easygoing. But I think as like an ambitious young engineer, like the thought always crossed my mind, like, hey, you know, I'm like wasting my time here, right? Dealing with like all this corporate politics, like dealing with like a lot of like delivery delays and all that stuff. I just wanted to work where it's like, hey, I want to work in like a high stress, like high impact environment. And so that's why I chose like a startup scene just to see what it was like and just to gain that experience. And real estate, just because, you know, I really wanted to dive deeper into my passion for real estate.
That's super cool. It's so awesome that, like, I love software because you can do anything with software. And so as a result, like, even though you are an engineer and this is a very specific thing, your actual product that you're outputting has a direct impact on a specific domain. Like, I've worked a lot in healthcare and education, and now I'm working a lot with home services. And like, those are all three spaces that I have kind of, my wife's a nurse. Like, I have a lot of like passion and desire to work in those spaces. And I think it's really cool to be a software developer because you kind of get to dip your toe in these different domains, if you will, like, to be more technical. So like, let's jump off that word domain. And I just want to like have a quick conversation regarding, like, as a software engineer, why is it important that we understand the domain we're building for? And kind of like, what are your thoughts on that? And how do you even do that as a software engineer? I'm curious to hear you, John. It's like, you came in as a software engineer, but then were directly thrown into this product world. And even though you had, sounds like, a really good understanding of real estate and a real estate product are two really different things. So I'm wondering, like, how you got up to speed in the domain, and, you know, why is it important to understand the domain, and how can we do that and talk about that through our lives?
Yeah. So for me personally, the way I got ramped up in real estate specifically was through just looking through listings on Redfin. And so I think on the side, I really enjoyed just browsing and looking for investment opportunities. And so I've been doing that for the past 5 years and so. And so, like, I kind of understand, like, what, you know, investors are looking for specifically when, like, looking for specific listings and all that. In terms of, like, understanding the domain, I think it's really important that you as an engineer really understand the typical customer pain points in that specific domain, right? Initially, like, take real estate, for example. Initially, it was trying to search for homes without an agent, right? Now you have Zillow and Redfin. Now, like, you have all these real estate startups such as like Open Door, Rex, Purple Bricks that are trying to solve the transactional portion of the domain, right? And also from a tech and app standpoint, I think you also need to understand like the competition, right? I know real estate has been lagging compared to like other industries such as like health, transportation, logistics. But I think if you want to innovate in the space, we need to like not only bring in fresh like ideas, but also look at, hey, what's been set as a precedent by leading competitors and like learn from them and like not totally deviate away from that.
That's interesting. I want to talk about that for a second, like understanding and doing deep dives in the competition, because that's definitely something we do as a software development firm. Like, what other apps are you going to be like? What apps are we gluing together to kind of build your third? But I'm wondering the tension between the pressure to be on feature parity and the pressure to innovate, and where you feel like that falls between. Like, is it more important to cut features from competitors' app, or is it more important to adopt them? Like, how do you weigh out that tension?
I think it totally depends on what user value you're trying to provide, right? Let's say, like, for Open Doors example, we're trying to be a one-stop shop for home buying and home selling, right? And so I think up to a certain point, it's like, hey, you know, if you think about like Redfin and Zillow, right? Both of their apps are basically lead gen tools, right? Mm. And so if we look at our app and say, hey, how do we make all our these different, like our web's main homepage browser website, our main mobile app, if we look at these as like lead gen tools, how do we use that and say, hey, you know what, how do we translate that and say, hey, this is what we're trying to provide user value for. For us, it's like buying and selling homes. And say, hey, these are the tools that you need to actually buy and sell homes. Let's provide them for you so that you don't have to use any other app. You can use our app and it'll translate over into using our core products.
Yeah. I think that's so interesting, the idea of like the lower level feature and not just the lead gen tool, because I see that in tons of other verticals. Like, for a long time, the web was just solving making the connection. And then once the connection's made, like, leave it up to the users. And like a really quick and dirty example would be like Craigslist. That just solved like getting you my phone number and getting the fact that it's there. But now we're seeing all types of other startups like Mercari and tons of other that are handling the entire transaction and like guaranteeing between buyer and seller, like even the difference between like all those things. And I feel like that's happening more and more and more in other industries. Another example would be like in home services, we see like things like Thumbtack or Home Advisor. Like, basically, like, you pay, you get the lead, and then it's up to you to deal with it. And I think there's so much opportunity for tech being smarter about actually helping with the transaction and not just like the humans will take care of it, whatever. It's like, no, we can come in and we can really optimize this and really innovate on the transaction level. But to bring conversation back to the idea of understanding the domain, I feel like we've got some really good like key takeaways, which is one, understand the customer pain points. Two, develop software for things you're passionate about. Like you were already passionate about, so it made sense to go into it. And I think three is survey the landscape and like check out other competitors that are out there to like understand those feature lists. Does anyone have anything to add to that kind of bullet list of, you know, understanding a domain you're about to jump into?
Yeah, so I think one thing that I took away from what John was saying is that you don't necessarily need specific, like deep real estate knowledge to be successful. I think there's a lot to say about understanding what customers' pain points are. For example, it's like,
yeah,
you don't necessarily know all the nitty gritty details of like what it means to close a house, nor do you have to have gone through that process. It's sort of more of like, hey, I understand that there is a pain point here. I can consult with people who do have knowledge about this and work with them on building a tool that will eliminate some of those pain points, which I think is interesting because I was kind of going into this conversation with this like preconceived notion that you're instantly going to become a more successful software engineer if you have very specific and deep knowledge of the domain you're working in. But now I'm sort of realizing that, you know, maybe that isn't true. It certainly does help just as a person who has more understanding and more empathy for a problem, but you don't necessarily need to have really deep knowledge.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. I think the other thing that I've really taken away, because I have had the challenge of, and it's like been an amazing privilege and challenge in my job, is really jumping from domain in the last 5 years. And I haven't been able to necessarily go super deep on any single domains. But a big tip that's really helped me is just grabbing books on subjects. And so I remember I had to do this software stack for this medical recruiting company, and I knew nothing about hiring and recruiting, and especially specifically medical recruiting, is like really interesting with all these layers. And so like literally grabbing Medical Recruiting for Dummies and just powering through that book just to understand that industry's language and understand the overall concepts of it. I think that's really powerful to do so. And not that you need to go deep on it, but to just to like make sure you understand it. And I'm lucky that I love learning about weird things. I have even since I was a kid. Like I was the kid who would ask a friend's dad, like, what do you do for work? And he'd be like, oh, you know, I'm an investor. And it's like, well, what does that mean? Like, what do you do every day? And like, I've always been interested in people's tools and how they work and how they think. And so I really love that. So, but the thing that I'm saying is read books, like just jump into the book if you have to kind of tackle a new domain. And I know for you, JP, you've had a couple of projects pre-Open Door. And I know you've done a couple of side projects at some points that were in kind of different spaces. And how did you kind of jump into those? And do you resonate with any of these directions for understanding the domain?
Wow, my answer is going to be really lame, but to be honest with you, I'm sort of on the opposite side of the spectrum. Like, John seems like a kind of person who's like, you know what, fuck this Intel thing. I don't want to develop hardware for people that, you know, the hardware I might be working on is like, it might not even be seen. Like, realistically, it's covered by a nice encasing that looks sexier than like the stuff that you're working on, right? And then so it's like, hey, I want to go in and I want to work in the real estate space because that's something I'm passionate in. My coming into Open Door and the domain itself was like, hey, I'm trying to find my first like real good job outside of like being self-taught. And an open listings just happened to be like a really good startup. And I like rolled a dice and here I am now. That being said, I did interview for a couple of startups that were basically the same thing as WizTutor, but like more established. And and those, I had such an easier time talking about the problems that we had faced and like even just relating to the people that were interviewing me. But that was at a time where my technical skills weren't as good as my domain skills. But I think even then, just having some of that knowledge like put my foot in the door, or like it had me, they kept me around a lot longer than I should have because I like totally bombed the technical interview.
You had specific knowledge, right?
Yeah. And so I was like, hey, you know, for my first like quote unquote real job after, you know, like landing that first big job at like a tech company whose name people actually know, it was just like, hey, what company is going to roll the dice on me kind of a thing, unfortunately. Like, I saw real estate and I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. Like, I've heard of Zillow, but I didn't even really know what open listings was. But I was certainly open to, like, understanding what kinds of problems they were trying to solve and being on board with that. It was honestly mostly because they were working with Ruby on Rails and JavaScript, and I was like, that is legitimately all I do all day, every day. So, like, let me solve a new problem and not tutoring Uber for tutors.
Yeah, I love your honesty there. And I think it's a really interesting observation because because you had domain experience, even though your technical skills didn't have the same pedigree like someone John has, like being a low-level Intel engineer, like really having this amazing technical experience, even though you didn't have that kind of like technical pedigree, you really were able to move really far along the interviews because you could speak eloquently about the domain. And I think it's interesting in our industry how the business side and the technical side are often in conflict with each other, and throw design in there too. Those three tensions are always in conflict with each other. But I think the more you can straddle all three worlds very comfortably, the more well-rounded you are as a software developer. And I think that it's really useful for anyone. And I just think like the hot tip in there too is if you're applying and you're trying to apply a little bit above your pay grade or punching above your weight, like get every other skill checkbox you can checked. So that's read books about their domain, really understand their business well, like go deep in understanding it outside of just the technical, but also like obviously focus on the fundamentals, be sure you're an excellent engineer, like do those other things as well. But I think like that's an interesting hack to be able to give yourself a few extra points is like really either be passionate about or understand the business you're going into. But I want to talk about one thing real quickly, which is like, do you have to be passionate about the domain you're working in as a software engineer? Or do you feel like you can find joy or find passion into a domain? Like, how are things looking? And I know like you're on recording, it's public. And so it's funny to ask you, JP, but like, you didn't have necessarily interest in real estate before going to open listings. Do you have more interest in and passion for it now? And do you feel like that you have to have that to be successful as an engineer?
Yes. Personally, I don't think you need to have passion for the domain you're working in. I think the sort of problems should interest you. I mean, obviously, I think that goes without saying that if you're not interested in the work you're doing, you're going to have a bad time. So there needs to at least be a little bit of an interest. That being said, you know, my exposure to real estate, all things real estate currently, is every now and then I'll still be on our like legacy open listings app, which is just like basically ingesting a bunch of it's like it just displays a bunch of MLS listings.
Right.
No different than something like a Redfin or Zillow would do. I just personally happen to like our search experience more, which is something that John's laughing about because he prefers Redfin's search experience. I'm trying to say things that are appropriate for public ears. But that being said, like every now and then I'll throw in some filters of looking at homes that, you know, maybe 4 or 5 years down the line I'll actually be able to afford. But if we're talking about where I am in our funnel, I'm still at the very top where I'm just sort of browsing. I'm window shopping. I'm a window shopper where I look at homes and I'm like, oh, this is kind of cool. Like, hey, you know, look at this turnkey house. It has two bedrooms, one bath, and a nice yard or whatever. But I've never been so serious as like, hey, I'm actually visiting a home that I'm interested in. So that all that is to say that like my exposure to all things real estate today is like very minimal. I have like very minimal contact with it. And to be honest with you, I would say that I don't have like a passion for buying and selling homes because I've never done either of those things. And so to me, it's not like a problem that like sits very closely with me. But I do think that, I mean, to me, they're just like problems that users have. And I think it's fun trying to like fill a need, right? Like to like say, hey, here's a problem someone's having. How can I fix it from like an engineering standpoint? And how can I like really make a better experience?
I resonate with that for sure, which is just like, it's interesting regardless of the domain it's applied to. Like to me, the software tooling and solving users' problems is an interesting process. And so I will say though that there is a deeper level of satisfaction. And like in practice, sometimes like I charge less money so I can do it more for domains I'm actually like very passionate about or interested in. So like I'm really interested in this idea of helping people manage chronic illnesses. Like you can be better by just eating better and exercising, and like very interested in that space, and like will really go hard to try to work more in it. But in the same breath, I will also work with clients in a domain that I don't necessarily love and I'm not excited about, but I can get excited about the idea of solving people's problems. And I really see myself, like this is a weird way to see myself, but I see myself as like a 2020 blacksmith. Like that's what we do. Like blacksmiths used to make the tools for every person in town, regardless of what people did. You give it to the blacksmith and he would help you engineer a tool to help you do your job better. And I feel like that's what's so cool about software is like, that's what we do. We build tools to help people do things better, whether that's end users, admin users, businesses, whoever it is, like we're building like this generation's tools. So I'm curious to hear John's perspective, because like you straight up left Intel because you didn't have that domain passion. So I feel like I'm assuming that you would disagree with us that like the domain matters. So I'm curious where you fall on that.
So initially when I started at Open Listings, I really thought like, hey, you know, to really succeed as an engineer, you really had to care about the industry and all that stuff, right? But the more I worked here, the more I realized, hey, you really don't need a passion for the domain you're working in, right? What I do think you need, though, is a open mindset and the willingness to immerse yourself as a typical user in our domain, right? And I mean, it's might sound easier than it sounds, but it's actually like, I think when I observe a lot of people in our industry, it's like a lot of people like say, hey, how do I apply just tech straight up into this space? You know, use the latest and greatest like user experiences, layouts, designs, and all that stuff, right? And I think, no, it's if you really look at it from like, what's our typical customer, right? People are in their mid-30s, early 40s, maybe even older customers that say, hey, I just want something where I can, you know, easily find a house, see why it's actually a good value to me. Does it fit my criteria? And if it does, you know, how do I transact on this really fast, right? I know a lot of people like these days are trying to make like the greatest, like most modern looking apps. I think in our space, it's like, hey, we need to understand like what's been set by like Redfin and Zillow. Try to innovate on that, make it like, you know, more moderner, but don't totally deviate where it's like, hey, the user experience is totally different.
Yeah, I think there's benefit in like jumping off from existing paradigms in a domain. Like this is generally how a healthcare app presents things to doctors. It's like, okay, yeah, I kind of understand this intuitively. I think that that can be overvalued sometimes, but I also think it can be undervalued in others. Like throwing it all away is not a good step, but then also like cloning is not a good step. But there's a middle ground there that I think is really important. I think it's interesting that like going into your new job, you were like, okay, yeah, we have to have passion for the domain, but it's okay if you don't. I think there is an X factor that happens though, when you are really passionate about the end product and like very personally empathetic with the end user or the end user is yourself. I do think there's some magic in that, especially when you are like in the dip. Like if you're struggling to push through a big bug or you're struggling with your current career, it can be really useful to align yourself with that North Star of, no, I'm solving problems for users XYZ. I love users XYZ and I'm gonna really dig into that. So that's really interesting. I kind of want to shift the conversation a bit from like, as software engineers, can you talk about any times that you had some really interesting insights from somebody who was non-technical? And like, how does that work in your guys' day-to-day, whether at Open Listings or even in your background as software developers, other places? Like, how does non-technical voices shape the final product?
Cool. I want to give an example that's the exact opposite of that, which was like, when I first started Open Listings, I had to like on-ramp myself, like on-ramping on the tech stack was one thing, but being thrown into a feature where I had to do things like my first biggest features was giving showing agents the ability to set their schedule. And there was just so much real estate jargon and things like agents, like what's a showing agent? Like, I mean, that's specific to that's specific to us, but even just being thrown with all these technical terms, I was just like, what the hell's going on? Like, I have no idea. Like, I need someone to explain this like I'm five.
Yeah.
And then dumb it down even more. So for me, it was like, I needed someone who was like, who had knowledge of this real estate stuff, non-technical, technical, whatever, to just like even break it down further for me so that I could even have an understanding of like the core basics.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. What about you, John?
I really do think the non-technical people surrounding your company are truly important, right? Like, let's say you do have, talk about real estate, for example, right? Let's say you do have like a deep understanding of real estate and how it works, right? It'll ultimately like give you like a good starting direction, but in the end, you're not making the product for yourself, right? You're making it for the masses. And so I think, you know, whether you have knowledge of the domain or not, I think people that will succeed are the people that actually do their due diligence, talk to, interact with people that say, hey, you know, what are your pain points and how do I solve them? And not just do it for like, you know, just one or two, but like truly going out there and like understanding customer pain points is really what's going to be beneficial for you and your company. And that's how I really think like non-technical people in your company can be really beneficial to you.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. It's funny because I my wife is like extremely non-technical, and I do my best to like keep her in that bubble and not like over-educate her, because I get the opportunity to like be around a normal person using a computer. But there's been like so many tiny like user experience and user interfaces insights I've gotten from both watching my wife use a computer and like my dad, who's like 65. Like one that happened when I was working with my dad one time, like I'll help him with IT stuff, is he was trying to sign into a website, but he was trying to sign up for a website, but he was in the sign in form. And like, he's like entering his username and password and just doing it over and over and over. And he's like, it's not working. Like, why the hell won't this website let me sign up? I'm like, well, you're trying to sign in. And like this interesting insight came to me. It's like, why are those ever two different things? Like there's rarely a time that we can't redirect and prompt the user better down that path. Like if you have an email and password, it's not there, just fucking make it. Like, why are you saying like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it shouldn't be that complicated. And it's interesting because we're all used to these conventions and it's obvious to us. Another one is like when you go on mobile sites and they have the banner that says download our app at the top. I realize that 99% of people never dismiss those. It's like, it's a bad user interface for everyone because they just never click the X. And they also don't download the app. Like there's so many little things that I've gotten like that. And I could go on forever about like specific product insights coming from people who are non-technical, just like asking very simple questions. And I feel like there's so much wisdom in that simplicity sometimes that doesn't have the cruft of thinking about a database, that doesn't have the cruft of thinking about convention. I think it can go a really long way. So I think it's interesting.
Yeah,
I want to shift the conversation. Oh, go ahead.
Oh no, I was just gonna say there was this time where we went to Phoenix. It was like a market visit, and we very specifically like wanted to interview one of our agents. So one of our agents who goes around and like shows people homes. And
yeah,
there was a lot of insight I would say that came out of that, because we were finding out that he was using our app in ways that we didn't intend. And I feel like I brought this example up before. Was he didn't want to have to go through the whole rigmarole of unlocking a home through the app and then waiting for the little animation to spin up. So he had like our customer support on speed dial. So as he would roll up to the house, you know, anticipate like, I don't know, 30 seconds before actually getting to the front door, he would hit the speed dial and then it would unlock the house. And then he had it down to an art so that by the time he got there, it was open for him, which is like more magical of an experience than
yeah,
like going to the home, hitting that unlock button, waiting for the animation to spin up, saying that it's successfully unlocked, when he could like bypass all of that and do it faster. So I thought that was interesting, because he doesn't care about like the specific user experience. He just wants like something to be really convenient and fast for him.
He's a realtor who just needs the door unlocked. He wants to show the property. And like, what's the convenient way to do that? And it's really interesting how, and there's always that design example of like the walkway in the college. Yep. Which is like the grass that people walk through. And it's like, that's the path of least resistance. Like design will kind of surface itself sometimes. I think that's a really good example of that. And like, if you weren't listening to that, you wouldn't realize that there's a lot of opportunity there that needs to be leveraged. And I also think it's really easy for us as tech people to want to throw tech at problems, when sometimes like literally a phone number and someone answering the phone is actually a better solution.
Yep.
So I kind of wanted to ask about that. Like, how do you know when it's a good opportunity for tech, like building, coding something from scratch versus a non-technical solution, or maybe like an off-the-shelf solution? Like, for example, a client of mine is at a lower stage and they were thinking about doing like this custom resources help desk kind of a thing. Like, you know how like sometimes there'll be like a docs and support site and they didn't want to use Zendesk and they didn't want to use something else. They wanted to be able to like easily edit themselves and control the interface. And at the end of the day, we actually just gave them a Notion board and like let them have that Notion board be public. And like, that's the help and support site. And for like an earlier stage startup, it's perfect. Like, that could actually scale to a long way. I know Notion themselves use that as their help and support site. And so to me, that's also a non-technical solution in that it's not an engineered solution. So I'm wondering how you guys feel about an engineered solution to things versus a totally non-technical or, you know, some type of other solution, whether it be off the shelf or something like that. And what's that breakpoint? What does that look like for you guys? How do you think about that?
Yeah, it's so funny. John and I were just talking about this the other day, because I feel like as engineers, we always want to reach for building an app for something. Like a quick example of that is like I used to track like my every time I would gas my car, I would basically write in my notes app, I would write a bunch of calculations just so I could see like what my miles per gallon was. Really lame. I stopped doing it.
That's why we're friends, buddy.
Yeah. And I was like, dude, I should build an app for that. Like the first thing I thought of, because I had this like really long scrolling list of like all of the money I've spent like in miles per gallon and all this stuff. And I was like, yeah, I should build an app for that so that I have a cool little interface to do this. And then I was like, As I was typing like Rails new gas app or whatever, I was literally I was like, what am I doing here? This is a spreadsheet. Yeah. Why do I need to build an app for this
when
I could literally build a spreadsheet and have a formula that spits out how much I'm getting like my miles per gallon. And so I think it's funny because a lot of the times we're just like, oh, we should build an app for that. And you know, half the time when people come up to you and they're like, hey, John, I have an idea for an app. And in the back of your head, you're like, use Google Docs or something like that.
Yeah, use Airtable. Yeah, I am. And actually, like, that's a lot of my first conversations with founders more recently is, you know, here's a lot of resources on no-code startups. Like, go validate the concept. Like, go build this on Airtable. Here's a little UI. I'll help you wire it up together. Like, we can do a couple-hour call, but, like, you can do this. You can wire it up and get it started. And I am all for that. Like, as someone who that world could eat my job, I'm more than happy for that world to eat my job because I think it's better for the world to validate product ideas faster and let entrepreneurs get to the world quicker. And so it's interesting because I feel like we all have that as an engineer. Like, oh, I'm going to build this app. And it's like, well, like, I feel like 9 times out of 10, that app is just like a spreadsheet with an interface. Like, that's really all it is.
Yeah. And so it's really funny. And I think, John and I were talking about this the other day, was like, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, apps were being built and technology was being used for convenience. And that's when you started seeing a lot of things like DoorDash and Postmates. And the reason that those were so successful nowadays is because it's like, that provides value to me, like convenience, right? So like, it's so convenient for me to get it. Like, what's the easiest way for me to get a Chipotle burrito? Is it for me to get into my car, park at Chipotle, look for parking, order? Or is it easier for me to just like press a couple of buttons in an app? And so now I think back then it was all about convenience. And that's why you have things like Lyft and Uber, is because like everything is just so convenient. And I think back then it was easy to be like, hey, we should apply technology to this specific domain problem because the value that it provides users is that it makes things so much more convenient. But nowadays, I don't know that that's necessarily true. John, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I really think like these days, like if you look at the app store, it's so saturated with those kind of apps, right? And so like if you wanted to like create your own startup and say, hey, I want to automate the transportation industry, right? You've already got Uber, you've got Lyft, you've got Via, you've got all these other apps that like that you really can't compete with anymore, right? Like I know like data science and like machine learning and deep learning are like big words these days, but I do think like even though it's all hype, I do think eventually in a couple of years that like we're trending towards a more insight-driven app ideas, right? And so first it was convenience. And so how do we farm like that data and like be able to give users like better insight on like, you know, future decision-making, right? And so I think the new startups that will actually succeed in the future are, hey, how do we like provide insights to users that we've collected from not just you, but from like everyone else, and say, hey, how do you do things?
There's no other way to see that data. It's not surfacing data in a different way, and it's not connecting two parties. Like, there's been a lot of innovation in both those things.
Right.
It's interesting too, because I feel like in the world of startups and software, for a long time, the software was the hurdle. Like when first doing Airbnb, like all the way back when he was founding that, like the actual software component was the challenge, but now you could build it 100 times cheaper and easier than he did when that started because they've paved that way and we're standing on the shoulders of giants. And so it's interesting in the tech world now, and most conversations I have with founders is like the app part of this is the easy part. The hard part is finding product market fit and like all of the business logistics and the business innovations that need to go behind supporting this app. But I think to bring the conversation back to like, how do we know tech, there's a good opportunity for tech? Like, I think an obvious one is like, if someone's doing anything over and over again, like that's obviously an opportunity for tech. I think another opportunity for tech is something that's high transactions. It's like, there's a lot of parties involved and a lot of logistics to manage where balls often get dropped. And I think that's kind of the bucket where Open Listings is trying to live in. Open Door now. Open Door specifically is trying to live in is like the home buying and selling process has all of these different parties involved, all this paperwork that needs to come in. Computers are really good about holding that all in their brains and like letting people know with reminders what's due when, and making sure there's a clear process for that type of logistic. So I think, like, obviously, like, repetitive tasks, obviously high, you know, logistics or interaction tasks. Is there any other, like, ways that you can identify potential areas where tech is a good solution?
To me, I think tech is a good solution when you can successfully answer the question, does this make my life 100 times easier?
100. I love it. Yes, not just 10, yes, not 100, just 5.
Just 100. Because if you think about it, does this gas app that I would have made make my life easy, like 100 times easier than just inputting it into
like
a spreadsheet?
1%.
Right? No, easier. It doesn't. But I started thinking about all of these scooter companies, like Bird, and then there's like Lime, and then now there's like Wheel, those like
there's
mini bike
thousands.
Things.
Yeah, there's so many of them.
And it's like, dude, that actually does make my life 100 times easier walking like a mile. Because it's like, do I really want to take an Uber a mile? Not really, but
they
like,
do. They do. I'm with you. Yeah.
You know, and it's just like, man, they filled a void that I didn't know that I had. And so I think that's another thing too, is like, is this a solution to a problem that I didn't know that I wanted fixed? Mm-hmm. And does it make my life 100 times easier than if I was doing it the old way? Which is, I think
that's, to me, that's the breakpoint too of when an Airtable or a Google Sheet is no longer the solution, is when it's painful. Mm-hmm. Like, is something besides an Airtable or something hacked together with something off the shelf 100 times, I would say 10 times, is it going to be 10 times better than the current experience? And is there pain around running the business? At that point, it's time to build. And so more and more, like, I'm really encouraging founders to either augment existing products with off the shelf things as much as possible. Like, let's just configure Intercom differently to pass that message along to the user versus building a whole interface for it. Like, let's try to use what's off the shelf, really feel the pain of that not being enough, and then identify the insights to actually build, because then you have such a clear product roadmap and definition. So I think it's interesting that you position it around pain as well. Do you have any thoughts on that, John?
I definitely do agree with that. Especially like if you look at it from like an Open Doors perspective, right? What's the pain point of like what Open Doors trying to solve? It's trying to buy and sell houses, right? And so I think like if you look at it from like the home buying process, I think the stigma with home buying or like real estate in general is real estate agents, right? I mean, no offense to them, there are a bunch of great real estate agents out there, but there's this stigma that like, hey, you know, a lot of them are business salespeople that just want to like, you know, transact on your home, and they don't really care about like if it's the true fit for you. What is it? They charge, like, if you look at it for the work that they do, they're charging hefty amounts of commission fees. And so I think like where open listings came in, it's like, hey, you know what? I don't think agents should be, you know, getting paid this much. I think we can make the process more transparent, a lot easier for customers. So they know it's like, hey, you know, this is where my money is going towards. And so I know like what I'm paying for instead of this like black box where like real estate agents hold the monopoly in and all the knowledge. And it's like, hey, you know, what am I really paying you for and all that stuff?
Super cool. Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. I think the last question I'd love to throw to both you guys is, I'm really struggling with the idea of over-optimization versus under-optimization, of thinking about a feature set. And I wonder like how you guys fall on that and how you work with that tension, you know, working with your product teams, working and building software. How do we make sure that we're scoping the solutions to the right amount of pain? And I feel like it's really easy for us, because it's like my area of expertise, to just write more code and throw more code at it. And like the level of quality of code, the more recently, like I really want to go deep and make sure it's like really beautiful code. How do we scope that kind of like solution toward the problem within the context of where tech meets business?
Ooh, that is a tough question. It's like, how do we make sure that we're not doing too much for the solution? And how do we know if we're doing too little?
Right.
I think it all goes back to, am I solving a customer's pain point, and am I doing that efficiently? So I think like, if you have a solution such that it's not something that a customer is excited about, or it's something that a customer still has a little bit of pain. Like, I think the solution should be, it should be such that a customer doesn't even think about it. It's just like what they know to be reality. It's like, hey, this works exactly as I expect it to work. And I don't even think about it because it just does what I think it's going
to
do.
Damn, that's a hard bar to hit though. And like, you're totally right. Good design is invisible. Like, you don't notice great design.
I think you'll know when something is under optimized, but it's hard to know when something is over optimized, right? Because potentially the perfect solution that is at the optimal amount of like time spent, and the over-optimized solution potentially have the same outcome, right? Because the user, hopefully at that point, is just using the product and not thinking about all these different things. It just works because they expect it to work and it works that way. But an under-optimized solution is just like, hey, how come like I thought this button was going to do this and I thought I was going to be able to message people and I thought I was going to be able to do this.
It's great that I can message them now. I couldn't before, but why not photo messaging?
Right.
Like that's obvious. We need to have photo messages. And so for me in the world I play, which is like early stage startups, I always under-optimize because it's easy. Like you get the feedback immediately that there's more optimization needed. Where on the flip side, if I over-optimize, not only does the feature take longer to get to the user, but then I don't know if I overbuilt it because I really don't get feedback. Like no one's ever going to tell you this does too much or this is too fast or this works too well. No one's ever going to tell you that. And so in my world, like generally under-optimization, less feature-rich, less speed, like a little bit less performance makes actually a lot of sense because the pain is what continues to leverage the things in the right directions versus it being like this over-optimization going deep. But I think it's probably different for a scale of an open door. And do you guys have any thoughts about the difference between like early stage versus later stage and optimization?
I mean, to jump off of what you guys just said real quick, I think as engineers, it's like, if you don't, like a lot of engineers are so heads, are so bogged down and like, hey, how do I use the best algorithms for like these solutions, right? And so in most cases, if you don't look at it from a user's perspective, it's like, you know, you're definitely just over optimizing for things that are like, hey, you know, if I use this like really efficient algorithm, like, is it really gonna make a big difference? Like the performance latency is just gonna be like, hey, what if it reduces it from like 0.2 to 0.1 seconds, right? It's like, you're definitely like wasting a lot of time like trying to over engineer something where it's like this simple MVP solution can just do the job for you.
Yeah. I think you just have to be pragmatic about it too, because even at scale, it's sort of the same thing, right? It's like, hey, this algorithm is gonna save us like a quarter of a second. But it's like, you know, in real use cases, even at scale, it's like, you know what, a quarter of a second's fine. And I think this code's more readable and it's gonna be easier to test. So why not just do it that way kind of a thing?
Yeah.
It's definitely one of those things where you just have to like step back and think about like, how does this work for the user? And is this gonna like really blow up in my face at, you know, hundreds of thousands of users? And if the answer is no, then it's just like, screw it, just leave it. It's totally fine.
Yeah.
And so many times, like the optimization and performance problems is like good problems to have. It's like, great, our server went down because we had 200,000 users. It's like, great, you'll solve it. Like that's never no startup has ever died because of a non-technical, like I can't think of one that has died because of that. I will say from a security and user privacy standpoint, I would disagree with that. Like, I think that there's always an opportunity to protect your users' data and protect the security of your systems. And obviously that can bring you down. So I think that's the one area where I'd say you can never over-optimize. Like, it's very important to do that. That's so, like, so on the utmost. But like on the actual performance line, think of how shitty Twitter was for so long. Like, I saw the fail well every other time I went to use Twitter for like 3 years. And I still use Twitter. Like it didn't, if that didn't bring down Twitter, like nothing is going to get brought down from a business standpoint because of performance. Like they're not going to die. Amazon has big outages. Netflix has big outages. Everybody has outages. And it's like people move on. They reload the page. Like no one's going to have a mass migration because you had a little bit of downtime. That's the way I think about it. That was a super interesting conversation. Thank you so much, John, for your time and JP for time and thoughts. So I want to just move into picks and kind of wrap up the episode. So does anyone have any picks for this week?
Cool. Yeah, I'll go first, I guess. My pick is Netlify. And I might have picked this before, but I've just started using it more recently to deploy like...
I don't think you have. I feel like I hear about this on every podcast.
Really?
And I still don't know.
Now we are just a statistic because I said it.
Well, like, let's fix it. Because like, what the fuck is Netlify? Is it Heroku?
No.
Is it GitHub? What is it?
It's a way to host static sites. And I think it's big in the React community because all I have to do to deploy a React site is literally connect a repository to GitHub, and every time I push to master, it will like rebuild that React site. So it's like Heroku for static websites.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it is kind of Heroku, but for static websites specifically.
Yes, and you don't have to worry about like, so you know, with Heroku, it's like if you're on a free dyno, it's like you only get like 30 minutes of activity, right? But like Netlify is like always like up, I guess, until scale. So it's like you can host as many React websites as you want, as long as you don't have like hundreds of thousands of users kind of a thing. It's just a really
interesting,
like we were talking about throughout this whole podcast, is like, it's convenient.
Cool. Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. And I think the pitch of like, it's what Heroku is to Rails, but for static sites. And I get mm-hmm. that now. Cool. And what have you been using it for? Just kind of like side project stuff or what?
Yeah, just like side I actually hosted like I rebuilt my like quote unquote portfolio website, yeah. which is just a.
You have to check out this portfolio. Give us that URL. You guys have to see this. This should have been my pick this week.
Which is just a LaCroix can, but I hosted it on Netlify, and I was gonna do it on Heroku initially, just to like just because I know Heroku. Yeah. But I was like, this is like way too over optimized of a solution for what I need. I just need a static website, and so
what's your URL?
It's JeanPaulS.io.
Yeah.
So it's just like my IO, it's like an IO domain.
Yeah, I love this site. This is awesome. You got to check out his website. And we'll link it in the show notes as well. Cool. Awesome. Good pick. I'll have to check it out for like static site stuff, like side project stuff. That's super cool. What about you, John? What's your pick?
My pick is something non-tech.
I love it.
It's something that I've actually become really grateful for. It's actually a Murphy bed. So the room that I live in, it's actually really small. And so we have a lot of guests that come over. And so there's this room in our house where we use it as a laundry room. And so it's always cluttered because we need a lot of space for like all our clothes. And so I was like, hey, how do we make this room more optimized and more efficient, especially for when guests come over, right? And so I was like, Murphy bed will do the job. So basically for people that don't know what a Murphy bed is, it's basically a bed. It's basically a bed that folds up into the wall. And so you can always fold it back down every time you want to sleep. And I didn't realize how like appreciative I was of that technology just for like the convenience that it provided me.
Man, it's making me think like it'd be awesome here in my office because like this is where guests stay, is my home office here, and we blow up air mattresses and it's like so inconvenient and shitty and uncomfortable. And yeah, this would be so fucking cool to do that, the fold downs. I feel like I didn't really know this was a real thing. Like it's always in cartoons and like the Three Stooges and they get folded up.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Like it's cool that it's like a real thing. I didn't really know that it was. That's super cool. Cool pick. My pick for this week is actually DuckDuckGo, which is a search engine. And I switched over from Google to DuckDuckGo as my default search. It's been over a week and I have only once reverted back to a Google search. It's that good and that fast and that much on parity. This is 28 people in like Pennsylvania and they are just killing it. And it's way more, they don't do any profiling or tracking. So like they do sell ads, but it's just against your search terms. Like if you search for a Toyota Camry, they'll sell ads against that Toyota Camry search term, but it's not related to you as a user because I'm just like more and more, I'm excited to see smaller teams building great products that solve problems for me that aren't like in the fold of the big five tech companies. And more, like I'm really excited to try to support some of those other efforts. And I'll give you an example. Like I really tried to use Firefox for like a month. I like wanted to use it, but it's kind of shitty and it does not work as well as Chrome. But with DuckDuckGo, like in a week, I haven't noticed a difference. Like the performance is there, the product is good enough. And so I think it's important that we look at these companies when trying to fight the big five, and we don't just use things because they're small, but we use great products because they're great. And like it has the added benefit that it's also supporting a different option. And so like Google still has a ton of my data. Like I use Gmail, I use Google Maps, but like giving them one less data point feels really good to me. And it feels really good to support a company like DuckDuckGo. So, and you can actually change your default like in Chrome to DuckDuckGo in your iPhone. You can change your default search to DuckDuckGo. And like,
oh,
I feel like just do that, set it and forget it. And if it works well for you, just like live with it, because if enough people do that, like it's going to make a world of difference for our economy long-term. It really will. The more that we can kind of think about undermining, like maybe not every single time ordering on Amazon, maybe we can support some other companies. Like maybe for that new sleeping bag, you can buy it at REI. It's an extra $5, but like there's actually people working and like there isn't as creepy shit going on. Because like you look at some of these companies, they're just like you had mentioned actually earlier in our conversation, John, like you were like, you can't compete with Uber. You just can't. And I think that we have kind of painted ourselves into these corners because we've all kind of migrated to these big five because they are great products. Like they build some great things. But I think there's a lot of opportunity to be open to alternatives and thinking about like, huh, what's the open source? What's the alternative solution here? And if it's great, like let's fucking use it. Like, why aren't we?
Yeah, totally. I'm down with that.
Anyway, I'm off my soapbox for the week. Again, John, thanks so much for your time. Thank you, everyone, for listening. You can visit iterationpodcast.com for more info on the show and show notes and links for this show's episode. And if you like the show, just tell someone about it. I don't care about iTunes reviews. It's So if you want to give us a 1-star review, that'd be awesome. That's how I know you love the show. Otherwise, no, I'm just kidding on that. But no, just tell people about the show. Like, ultimately, that's how we grow, is just due to our awesome listeners and you guys out there. So thanks so much. If you want to hit us up on Twitter, we're out there. And again, thank you so much for your time today. Later, guys.
Cool. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Peace.